Welcome to the Places We Call Home podcast, where we celebrate the courage, tenacity, and resilience of migrants who have moved from their country of origin to make a new home in America.
Well, honestly, I feel far more American than I feel German. Fujitsu was my biggest customer. I would never, ever be able to come back into this country. They take your car, they take everything. And I didn't follow the rules. I surrendered to the experience. Whatever happened to me, I'm grateful for exactly the way it happened.
Oh, Lord.
I was poking the screwdriver between these two pieces of carpet bus bar.
See, I think even I know that perhaps that's not a good idea.
Can you wait for me? And she said she would, which was amazing. And she's now a nun in Sri Lanka, believe it or not.
She's now a what? My guest today is Thilo Christian Stompler.
Thank you, Yolanda.
You are an extraordinary man. You're very talented, an expert in consumer electronics.
Mm-hmm. Audio in particular, yeah.
And you have a number of patents. So I'm going to ask you a little bit about those as well. By day, you're an audio systems architect.
Yeah, that's actually my title. You're right.
And you've been here in the country for 41 years.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
You came here when you were 15.
Uh-huh.
Before we go into the background of where you're from and what brought you here, what is an audio systems architect?
Basically, it's the fun part of making a speaker because you get to engage with the customer early on when they have an idea. When they give you a napkin sketch, basically Amazon will say, we have a cylinder, the Amazon Echo, and we wanted to have this much bass. It's got to play music. It's got to be good for speech. And then you design the acoustics. How much amplifier do you have? How much power supply do you have? And you then sort of crafted really prototypes of what this thing could be like.
Okay, so they come with you like a cylinder and say, we want it to be this size.
Yeah, exactly.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
And then you do?
Yeah, that's right. They tell us the size and they tell us what they want acoustically. So they say, they wanted to sound as good as JBL or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So that's what you do now. But let's roll back a few years. Tell me where you're from originally and what brought you to this country.
When I was 15, my parents had a hotel and they decided to sell that and move to the United States from Germany. I landed in San Diego.
That's a great place to land. I love San Diego. So at 15, you came to stay.
Right.
So you are now trying to get grounded. How did you do that as a 15-year-old?
With difficulty. You know how it is when you learn another language.
States.
So at first, it literally my jaw would hurt at the end of the day. Because of the pronunciation of the English language is so different from Germany.
Your accent is still very German, and which is beautiful. I love it. I'm sure lots of Americans tell you, I love your accent.
Well, I love yours much more so.
Well, thank you. Are you still fluent in German?
Yeah.
And you're an American citizen?
No. One of the many mistakes I've made in my life. I have never applied for citizenship.
So I don't know if it's fair to therefore ask you, do you feel German or do you feel American?
Well, honestly, I feel far more American than I feel German. And that's obvious to me whenever I go back to Germany. You know, as much as I love Germany, it's a beautiful country. I can't imagine working in Germany. Germany is a kind of a rigid country and less tolerant of aberrant behavior in all kinds of ways.
I thought that was fitting. You're laying the groundwork here for some interesting questions.
But I love this country and nothing you can't do in California. You should go surfing in the morning and then ski in the afternoon if that's what you want. Yeah. So four years ago, I got it into my head that I needed to get a houseboat and live on a houseboat in Sausalito.
And that is something you definitely would not have done in Germany, right?
No, that went into Pappens. Maybe in Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm. Why houseboat? What?
The water. Just waking up in the morning and not knowing whether you're going to look at mud or water, for one.
What happens when you wake up and you're stuck in the mud? How do you function?
But that's the surprise. You wake up and the first thing I do is I look, I have my bed is raised by about 3 feet because I want to be able to look out the window and see the mud or the water, you know, high tide or low tide.
How did you ingrain yourself in American culture?
I guess, you know, work does, of course, occupy most of our time for most of us. And I'm lucky enough to do with something I'm very passionate about. I love audio and I love manufacturing loudspeakers. I always have, ever since I was a teenager. So that led me to make loudspeakers. And I had in my head that I needed to do this with my own business. And I started my own business. So I took up loans, you know, when you graduate and financial institutions love to give you credit cards and load you up. It's debt-free right away. Yeah. Very clever of them. So I did that, built some really outrageous loudspeakers that nobody in their right mind would ever buy. But I made those and I went to a trade show and failed. And then I had to figure out, what can I make that actually somebody might want to buy? So I designed another kind of speaker and I ended up selling about 500 pairs of those and became somewhat successful with it.
You're playing it down a little bit. You're actually a big dog in the industry, aren't you? You're well known.
Yeah, but not out of that one. So the first thing I did was buy someone else's loudspeaker and put it in a box. I traveled through the United States and I set up a little dealer network. And that was great. But big success came later when I realized that making speakers that are larger, that can make a lot of bass, is the funnest thing.
You found a gap in the market.
Yeah. And that was great. And I got to work with some of the leading people in the industry. And I got to be among the first to really manufacture that kind of loudspeaker. I had some large customers. Fujitsu was my biggest customer. That was half of our business at that time. We did about $3 million a year, roughly.
Oh, wow.
But then China really started to manufacture speakers much less expensively. My vendors started going out of business one after the other. So slowly but surely, I started buying parts in China. That had me, my journey into China. So it was devastating for me, to be honest.
Did your legal status bear any weight on what you were doing?
It had no impact until much later in MLF, because when you have a green card, that's really all you need to work. You know, it's basically a work permit. And not being a U.S. citizen has no practical impact other than the fact that you can't vote. That's about it. The one thing I did neglect and didn't realize is that you don't have the rights of a U.S. citizen.
That's right.
Very good deal. So when I filed bankruptcy, I was sort of just identifying with my business, and I thought I was my business. And I made some really big mistakes. I tried to hang on to some of the assets of the company, and I basically hid them in my friend's garages, the parts. Mm-hmm. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, when this is done, I'll reopen my business and I'll just start using all these parts. And, you know, bankruptcy, they take your car, they take
everything.
Except for your house. You do get to keep your house if you have one. But short of that, they take everything. And I didn't follow the rules.
Were you aware that you weren't following the rules?
I did. And as soon as I realized that was a big mistake, I owned up to it, but it was already too late.
What does that mean?
I told the bankruptcy attorney, look, I made a mistake. I didn't tell you about these assets that exist, and here's where they are. But the machinery was already in place, and at that point, I had already committed perjury.
Oh, so where did this land you then?
Well, that's exactly right. So what happened at that point is that I hired several attorneys to try to get myself out of this mess, but in the end, it didn't work. What happened is that federal prosecutor, in the end, decided to pick up my case because he saw that I perjured myself.
Oh.
And they pursued this. And in the meantime, and these things take a long time, 6, 7, 8 years.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it does mean, okay.
Is that how long it took for you?
It did. And so I wasn't convicted until many years later, actually. But in the meantime, I had to do something.
Right.
So I started consulting. And that brought me to China pretty quickly because most of the audio equipment was made in China.
That means you moved to China?
I ended up actually moving to China. Yep. I didn't really plan on that, but
whilst this stuff was going on in the background?
Exactly. All this was going on in the background, and I told my attorney that I would come back. Mm-hmm. And so I did come back once a year due to my bankruptcy.
But your life was there.
Exactly.
How long did you stay in China?
I was there for about 4.5 years.
Okay, so you had completely established yourself or re-established yourself in a new country again.
Yeah. And I landed in a not-so-well-known area called Xiamen, which is a large island. And it's a beautiful island. It's really quite unique.
Sounds like you miss it.
I do. It was beautiful. I lived on Xiamen Island. And the beaches were absolutely beautiful. I learned how to kiteboard. I really enjoyed it.
Did you buy a house there? Learn the language, for example?
No, Chinese is really difficult. And I can count to 10. I can order a beer and ask for the restroom. But short of that, Chinese is pretty crummy.
Mm-hmm.
In part because at some point, I ended up having a Chinese girlfriend. Absolutely beautiful woman. And we intended to get married at some point even.
Uh-huh.
And she really was much of my journey in China.
So you had your foot in the door, basically,
yeah,
as we would say.
Right.
As Brits would say, you had your foot in the door, your feet under the table, but you're here right now. What transpired to bring you back to the US?
Yeah, so as I was saying, this lawsuit going on in the background. So at some point during my consulting career in Xiamen, I was traveling to the company I work for now as a consulting job, and Tymphany decided to offer me a job the same day that I was there. And
that worked out well?
It did, yeah. It was great. And Linda moved with me. Xiaojing Liu is her Chinese name. She moved to Xiamen with me to southern China.
So you are living there with your beautiful Chinese girlfriend, and you're planning to get married. And there's the rumblings of this little grey cloud.
Exactly. I was very straight with my employer. I told them, look, there is this lawsuit going and there is a chance that I might go to prison at some point.
Oh.
And they said, well, we'll tackle that when you get there. And
that's very nice of them. They're very understanding.
That was amazing. I'm still grateful that they honored exactly what they said. And so then in the end, what happened is that I had to go back to the United States for a hearing. And that was now 6.5 years ago. And I was convicted.
Oh, wow. Did you know that that was a possibility?
I did, but I really didn't anticipate that I would end up going to prison for 6 months. That was not something I anticipated.
I am so sorry.
That was a great experience. I'm not sorry for it.
Oh, really? How is that a great experience? How is it?
I'll tell you. So I was convicted to go to jail. And of course, the first thing that ran through my mind, oh, this is going to be so horrible. And when you think of going to prison, you think of the worst case scenario is you go there and you get physically harassed and what else. And I was just imagining the absolute worst, and I prepared for that. And meanwhile, I couldn't go back to China anymore because I was already convicted. So that really screwed up my plans to marry Linda.
My gosh, I'm sorry. So you literally left thinking that you were going to come back and marry Linda, and Linda's back there waiting for you. And that was it. You didn't expect to be saying goodbye to her at that point.
No, I called and I said, look, I don't know how to deal with this, but I know that I can't go back. Can you wait for me? And she said she would, which was amazing. And
lovely woman.
She truly an amazing woman. She's now a nun in Sri Lanka, believe it or not.
She's now a what?
She's a nun, a Buddhist nun in Sri Lanka.
Oh.
She lives in Sri Lanka now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so while I was in jail for 6 months, and I'll get back to that, she decided to travel throughout Asia. And that took her to Sri Lanka at one point. And I knew that she was quite serious about her Buddhist beliefs.
Yes.
And I thought that was beautiful. And she then found this particular monastery in Sri Lanka that really meant a lot to her. She was there for months. And at some point she told me while I was still in jail, look, I'm really serious about this. I'm going to...
You're going to do it. And that was the end of any, obviously.
That was the end. I had hoped to bring her here eventually.
Yeah.
But then that's what she wanted to do.
But you're still in touch with her.
Yeah. I talked to her every other month and I still consider her family.
Of course.
And I wish her the absolute best. And yeah, it's
of
great
course.
That we're still in touch.
Wow. That's monumental. You said it taught you a lot.
It did. So just to start, learn a lot about when you are sentenced to go to prison, there's a certain way that you want to go to prison, is what my attorney told me. That was a really great thing, which is you want to self-surrender. The worst thing you can do when you go to prison is just show up at any police station and tell them, yep, I'm ready, take me in. What then happens if you do it that way is that they will arrest you, put you into the local jail temporarily. And then there's this thing called a train, which is actually a plane. And that plane goes from jail to jail to jail to jail. It doesn't go directly to the jail where you have to go. So you might be on the road or on the plane and then in another jail for up to a month. And you end up basically being chained in the plane, going to the next local jail that they're going to, and then you'll be there for a day or two until the plane takes off again. And I've heard absolute horror stories about that being a worst experience, much worse than prison. So thankfully I knew that, and I knew that I had to self-surrender. So the day before, in my own world, and I was thinking, this is really horrible. And so I talked to one of my best friends, and he told me, look at this as a spiritual experience. Go in there with the idea of being a monk and seeing this as an opportunity for transformations. You know, I've taken a lot of yoga classes and I've done yoga teacher training and all of that. And so Doug and I had that same mindset of being able to find inner peace in any situation.
Yeah.
Going in there and really looking at it as a spiritual experience where you get to surrender. And I managed to do that. I remember flying to West Texas to Lubbock, and then taking a taxi to about 45 minutes to this really small town called Post, Texas. Half of their economy is basically the three local jails that they have there. And I showed up in front of their door, in the prison, I should say, with the taxi. And I told them, yep, I'm here to self-surrender, which doesn't happen very often, apparently. And then what they do first is they strip you of your clothes and they give you an option to either send the clothes somewhere or destroy them. And they took all those. Then they do this cavity search, which is really invasive. Make sure that you don't have anything in your body cavities that you shouldn't,
right.
not supposed to bring in. And at that point, you feel like you've just been invaded.
Of course. Invaded. Of course.
And then they give you some new clothes, basically the
uniform.
And then they take an intake picture. And those intake pictures look the way you would expect. Most intake pictures look, you can see that. And they look horrible.
Right.
And somehow I managed to actually smile. I just told myself, look, I'm here. I'm going to smile until this intake picture.
So your attitude from the outset was significantly different, really, your approach. And do you think that's what got you through it?
It really was. Yeah.
Do you think there's something of your upbringing that also supported you in getting through that?
Honestly, I don't think so. I think it was really... I have to give yoga the credit for that. But Doug and I was driving down to Los Angeles to fly to West Texas. And during that 2-hour flight, Doug and I planned out how I'm going to make it through this experience, how I'm going to be a spiritual warrior, if you will, in jail. And it worked for me. I surrendered to the experience and I was dead. The prison guards would actually sometimes come over and go, hey, can we borrow your prison picture? Because we've never seen anybody smile on the intake picture. We want to show it to the other guards.
I have two questions. First, I want to know how you found Doug, because he is incredible to stick by you.
Yes.
And the other question, your family back in Germany, as well as your parents here, do you know what was going on with them?
You know,
what were they thinking?
My parents are incredibly supportive and my mother is absolutely amazing. She actually visited me once a month, almost every month, and probably was in there for 6 months. And that made a huge difference to me. When you know that your mother is going to visit you for a day and you get to spend a day just being with this family, that made such a huge difference. I gotta say, I'm very blessed to have such an amazing family.
Oh, mm-hmm. And your family in Germany, did you hear from them? Did you get the, what the hell did you do? What were you thinking?
No, actually, I don't think I even told, at that time, I didn't even tell my family in Germany anything about that. So they didn't even know.
Okay. Then tell me about Dove. Where did you meet him?
Doug Welch. That's a fun story.
He's obviously the man in your tribe, the friend, ride or die.
He's a great friend and he has made a huge difference in my life. So he's a really avid surfer, much more so even than I am. And I saw him pull up the surfboard in the morning when he was pulling into my apartment complex and I said hi to him. And about maybe 45 minutes later, I pull into the local Whole Foods up the hill and there's Doug again. It's like, didn't I just see you? And then... in the evening, I was doing some yoga on the beach and Doug walks past me and we see each other again for the third time in that day. And then we were best friends ever since, because it's like, what a crazy coincidence to meet the same person three times in a row. And there was even a time when we lived together for a year right on the beach in La Jolla.
So you clicked straight away.
We became instantly best friends. He was my surfing buddy and still is one of my best friends today. I mean, the friends that I have, I don't have that many, but the ones that I have are really dear to me and I view them as family.
I keep telling my daughter that it's not really about the number of friends that you make. It's about the quality.
So
it's amazing to have 2 or 3 true friends who will back you up, support you, cheer for you, fight for you, cry with you. I'm trying to teach her that as well as remind myself.
Yeah. And of course, it goes both ways, right?
You've had a really extraordinary journey in... I want to say a foreign country, but I think with you, I'm minded to not say that because you've already expressed the fact that you feel very American. But actually, which brings me to another point, that you're still on a green card.
Yeah, I still only have a green card. And that goes back to my prison experience and that I now have a criminal record. The American legal system is really interesting and very divided. So it turns out that when I was convicted and I ended up plea bargaining with my prosecutor, I had to sign a piece of paper that says that I've committed perjury, which I did.
Uh-huh.
And that gave me the criminal record that I still have that will never go away. As a result, the INS, which is the Immigration and Naturalization Service, considers me legal to stay in the United States. While I'm here, I'm legal to stay. I'm perfectly legal to work here with my green card. But if I leave the country and then try to come back, then Homeland Security, completely separate agency, has to decide if I'm readmissible or not.
Oh, so there's a chance that you would not get back into the country.
That would
be a repeat of what happened in China.
Much worse. the consequences are far more significant. But if Homeland Security decides that I'm not readmissible, if the Homeland Security judge decides that, then I would never, ever be able to come back into this country. And that is the chance that I'm not willing to take. I still haven't left the country for 10 years.
Oh, I see. That explains why you said earlier you haven't been to Germany. I have to say, I really admire and love the fact that you are the way you are about all of that experience and that you own it. It's a part of your life. It happened and it's not going to happen again. And you're still so extraordinary. Of course, why wouldn't you be?
Right. Let me share one more thing about the jail experience, if you don't.
Okay, I don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So the first 3 days in jail were probably the worst 3 days of my life, because the first thing they do is they have to test you for tuberculosis, because that's a very contagious disease.
Right, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, what they do is they will isolate you in a special cell that has negative pressure, so they literally pump air through there, which makes it quite cold and dry. Okay. And they have to keep you in there for at least 48 hours while they wait for an injection in your arm to either develop a bump, right? Basically your body reacts or not. If your body does react, that means you have tuberculosis. If it doesn't, then you're free to be admitted into the into the community, the jail, basically. In my case, I waited for 3 days, and while you're in there, you have nothing. Basically, you have clothes on your body, you have not much of a blanket, so you're really quite cold.
Purpose?
Yeah. You have no watch, no books, nothing. And it's just insane how it made me realize how dependent I am on communication. Not having anyone to talk to for 2 days straight and basically not sleeping much.
Because you're so cold.
It drove me insane. Your dad, and then you don't know what time it is.
Yeah.
You don't even know when you're finally going to get out. So I would ask every couple of hours, I would ask one of the guards, what time is it? Just so that I would know when I'm finally going to get released into the population, you know? So that was the worst. And it took an extra day to figure out where they would put me in jail. Because I had it something really silly. I decided that while I'm in jail, would be the ideal time for me to get surgery prior to going into jail. I needed to get my knee fixed because I had a torn ACL and meniscus. I thought, well, if I'm going to be there for 6 months, I might as well fix that and rehab myself while I'm there. Mm-hmm. So I went in there with crutches to jail.
Okay.
And they had to get me a special bed, which worked out in my favor because I got to have a lower bunk.
Okay.
I got to have two mattresses. Very nice. And it took them an extra day to figure out where to put me.
I was
in this cell for 3 days, and that was truly the worst experience. And then I got released into the population, and from there, I got to say, I was in there with 2,000 Mexicans in this prison in West Texas and Post. And my other inmates, mostly Mexicans, were there for illegal re-entry, as it's called. Most of these guys were good people. One of my cellies was a baker from Tijuana, who just came across the border to make more money for his family. A good person entirely. One of my cellies was a bit scary. He was a gang member, and he immediately told me, he had killed somebody before. And he wasn't the friendliest guy, you know, so I wasn't really concerned about him. He did something really silly. He ended up grabbing the butt of a female commanding officer.
Right. And not smart.
No, not smart. So he did that within 3 weeks of me being his silly. And that removed him from my cell. He was then put into solitary, basically, for 3 months. And that removed him from my cell, and then I got this other silly.
You got the baker.
I got the baker.
Whilst you were there, did you make any friends? I don't know if friends is the right word.
Yeah. What's crazy about being in jail and really beautiful is that you have no phone, you have no internet. And you actually, there's peace there. I took an AutoCAD class. I learned a little bit of Spanish and mostly taught the Mexicans more English because I might as well do that. And I ended up making some really great friends that are still my best friends. So most of the guys in there were Mexicans, but there were maybe a dozen or so non-Mexicans. And one of my best friends now is a guy by the name of Sandy Verma. Mm-hmm. And he used to work at Enron.
Yes, I remember. I remember Enron. Yes, I do. Yeah,
so Sandy was one of the executives at Enron, and
how interesting.
Being one of my best friends.
Still to this day.
We talk once a week.
How extraordinary.
He lives in Spain now. Most people that end up in that situation don't get to go back to the United States, but I got lucky on that one. So the big thing that I really got out of jail is that I realized that we're all on this journey together. Everyone in my life that I run across is my brother or my sister, you know, truly. Right? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And that changed my view on everyone that I run across.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Because if you're my brother or my sister, that changes everything, right?
Absolutely. When you're able to see people the same as you see yourself, it's very difficult to treat them as less than, to mistreat them.
Exactly.
When you see them as souls and spirits after the same things in life, just as you are, which is why I do this podcast. I really want to meet people from many different cultures and races and different countries and hear their stories, find the people behind the numbers and behind the assumptions and behind the labels. We can't all be lumped into one category, as we often are.
Yeah,
right?
You don't have an interest in people to begin with, right? I don't think, at least I wasn't interested in other people to begin with. That's a journey in itself.
So let me ask you this, Thilo. Do you ever... It sounds like you may say no, but I still have to ask it. Do you ever wonder if your life would have been better if you had stayed in Germany?
Yeah, one of the things that I guess I gave up quite a while ago, I gave up the idea of wondering what would, could have been, and the past is exactly the way it happened. And I don't believe that anything happens for a purpose, but...
So you don't believe that everything happens for a purpose?
No,
okay.
Not at all. But okay. I do believe that whatever happened to me, I'm grateful for exactly the way it happened. Mm-hmm. I would have wanted any other way.
You wouldn't change anything.
No.
Coming to America, everything that you've experienced has been worth it.
Yeah. I mean, it made me who I am now. I am probably as happy a human being as I've ever been. But, you know, I was arrogant. I just wasn't interested in other people. And I needed to go. The path that I had was perfect for me. And it got me to where I am now. And I'm still on the path.
Tell me about some of these stories then. Oh, yeah. You've blown things up.
So when you make speakers, one of the things you have to have is what's called a magnetizer. And it's a pretty scary piece of equipment that is also really expensive. I didn't have the money to buy that. It's a $50,000 machine.
50?
And I couldn't afford that. So I ended up reading up on how to make it. And I made my own.
Okay.
So a magnetizer is basically a thing that stores energy over roughly 2 minutes. You plug it in the wall at 240 volts usually. And
right.
It stores this energy for about 2 to 3 minutes in a large capacitor bank.
Yeah.
And then you hit a button and it discharges this rather large amount of power.
Rapidly.
Some very thick wires. The wires actually jump when it discharges.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
It goes through a coil, a fixture.
Oh my
gosh.
That
magnetizes the speaker. It's a pretty fun thing in a way, but it's also really scary.
Right.
It's literally like a lightning bolt.
Yes, that's what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
And what did you do with this?
So,
did anyone die?
No one died, but...
Any house is blown up?
No.
Okay.
I could have lost my eyesight though, and I definitely lost some of my hearing that day. So I'll tell you what happened. We were making speakers. We made 15 a day, and it was great because it was the first job that really made the company work. And I had this handmade magnetizer that I'd made over the course of 6 months, and we had this capacitor bank that was the wrong kinds of caps, actually. There was a part that you shouldn't be used for that. You don't use what's called an electrolytic capacitor for this job because of the discharge rate. You're supposed to use an oil-filled capacitor, which is capable of doing that. I didn't know that. And so I used these electrolytic capacitors. And one time, one of these capacitors decided to fail and it smoked. So the whole room was full of smoke.
Okay.
And we had to make this deadline to ship these speakers out.
Uh-huh.
And I decided, well, I can fix that. Well, I'll just go in there and isolate that one capacitor so that it doesn't keep smoking.
Uh-huh.
So I ran there with the screwdriver, fixed it up. Everything was fine. But I wasn't happy with the way this piece of isolator, capped-on isolator, was situated.
Uh-huh.
So I ran there with the screwdriver and poked
it. Oh, dear Lord.
I didn't know that one of my guys had plugged in the magnetizer and it was fully charged.
Oh, Lord.
I was poking the screwdriver between these two pieces of copper bus bar.
Yes.
And at that moment, all 8,000 joules of energy went through the screwdriver, ended up vaporizing the copper bus bar. The only smart thing I did that day was wear safety glasses.
Oh, wow.
So I literally had vaporized copper and no safety glasses.
Yeah.
And I saw basically a lightning bolt in a sphere in front of my face. It's like it had a supersonic shockwave because it evacuated. It literally produced a vacuum and then the air came back in.
Oh, my.
So it produces
goodness.
This black bomb going off.
Yes.
So I felt my chest take this shockwave. I fell to the floor. I felt my ears pulse in and out once.
Uh-huh.
And for the rest of the day, everything I saw was a greenish tint to it because of this rather you know,
bright light flash.
It's like lightning, a lightning bolt in his beard.
So with you just describing that to me right now, I'm sitting here with my mouth agape because I can just picture the whole thing. But I also have to say, you going in there with the screwdriver, I think even I know that perhaps that's not a good idea.
I mean, I thought the thing was...
You were just mischievous.
I thought it was unplugged.
Okay.
I had no idea that one of my guys had plugged it back in.
Oh, okay. You know? So we can forgive you for that. But can you see properly now? You can see straight.
Yeah. No, that was really stupid. Yeah.
But memorable. Yes. So can you hear properly now?
Yeah. I have my left ear doesn't hear as well as my right, but... I
but it's still functioning. Yeah. Okay.
So that was a fun one.
Tila, Tila. Can I wrap it up then, Tilo? I'm sure there's probably going to be a take two.
Oh.
You never know. And thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute blast. It's been a blast.
Figuratively and literally.
And literally.
Words.
Thank you once again.
Thank you, Amanda.
On the next episode.
I love U.S. I like the way the country is. I feel this from my home. But when I get here, I see how much he's a psycho. So because I study him, I be years, day, night without sleep. I think, what am I going to do? How am I going to get out of this? I don't know England. I don't know other people. I just him and his mom. They are completely evil. But I cannot confront them. If I try, I'm lost. I'm done. I need to be smart. I need to be safe. I need to find a way.